In this episode, I sit down with Craig Strong, the co-founder of Lens Baby. Craig Strong, welcome to This Week in Photo, man. How you doing?
Thanks, Frederick. I'm doing great. Excited to be able to talk about Lens Baby. I think about it all the time. I don't get to talk about it very much.
You know, I think this is going to be a really good interview because there's, you know, as you and I were talking about sort of in the green room, there's a bunch of camps. There's a camp of, you know, do I need another lens? And if I'm going to spend the money for this specialty lens, what's it going to give me? And then there's the other, you know, there's another camp that are rabid fans of Lens Baby that say, this is, you know, best thing ever. You know, this is define me as an artist kind of thing. So I want to talk about all that stuff in this interview, but I also want to talk about the genesis or the origin story of Craig Strong and Lens Baby and where this whole thing came from. Let's start there.
Let's do it.
Where did you get the idea for Lens Baby?
Well, when I went digital, I missed a lot of things of film, but the biggest thing was the fact that there was some sterile aspects, you know what I mean? That you saw gradations in skies and they weren't the same. And so I got kind of caught up in the fact that, hey, this doesn't look like my pictures used to look. Now, my pictures never used to look like they were shot with a Lens Baby, but they did have an organic feel to them because of the technology that I was using. I was using film. I was used to it. I knew how to get pictures that looked great. And so what happened was I got my D30 was my first digital camera, and I ended up in New York City. I hadn't gotten frustrated by the digital aspect yet, but I was immediately frustrated by the fact that my 28 was now a 45.
The crop factor.
And yeah, I was like, you know, I knew that in my head, but I'd never used a digital camera. I'd never used anything with a smaller than 24 by 36 image size. So I got this crappy video converter, put it on the front of my 28-1.8, and started shooting some of the first non-perfect images or images that were intentionally imperfect that I'd ever done in my career. At that point, I'd had a studio, let's see, since 93, and that was 2000, end of 2000, so 7.5 years. And I was ready to try new things. I'd been exposed to images that were more fine art by people that I'd shared my studio with. And I knew someday I wanted to try that, but I was good at what I did. And so I stuck to that until I'd tried something new. And, you know, long answer, but it was frustration that got me to try new things. And that initial video converter on the front of a Canon Prime ended up leading to me saying, hey, what else can I do? And that led me to putting anything I could find on the front of my SLR. And eventually other people said, how'd you take that picture? And I was making them for my friends, and it just took off from there.
You know, that sounds very similar to the origin story that we hear in Silicon Valley a lot. You know, there's guy or gal hits obstacle, guy or gal solves obstacle for themselves. People also need that solution. Business is born, you know, rinse, repeat, right? So,
right.
Yeah, and it seems to work really well. So where did the word Lens or the name Lens Baby come from? What was the story behind it?
Well, I had taught a couple of workshops and had some beta testers out there that were excited. I taught them with Kevin Kubota, and he actually asked me to teach a workshop. I didn't have anything to teach. I was like, well, I'm going to show him this $90, you know, which was really only worth like $30, if that, video converter. And I screwed it on the front of my prime lens, go do that. It's like, what, you know, and sit down and I'm done. And, you know, it's a week long workshop. So I figured I had to have something to talk about besides that. And I had this idea in my mind that I combined with other ideas, and eventually out came the Lens Baby. So I showed up at this workshop with, now I'm getting, I know you asked me about the name, but I'm digressing. I showed up at this, workshop with this box full of shop vac hose, because that was a huge paradigm that had to shift. How do I test all these lenses I was getting off of 120 folding cameras and whatnot, and loops off of eBay, and how do I get them to block out the light and still be able to focus? And I figured, well, I can just block out the light and see what it does when it's tilted. And then it actually ended up being our first focusing mechanism. So shop vac hose, I've got all these camera lenses that have been pulled off 1950s, 1960s cameras. And I've got we've got 20, 25 attendees at these workshops just kind of looking at me with this box of stuff being – I was just out of my mind excited about what I could do.
The Doc Brown of photography.
They're like, what the hell is this guy talking about? And what does he want me to put on my camera? So anyhow, so I do that three times. And at the end of those workshops, 20, 25 people each, everybody wanted one. Well, everybody was at least interested in one. A lot of people wanted to buy one. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't selling them. So I went to So that happened.
Yeah.
And then it started to get momentum, and I needed a website, and I talked to my wife. We were driving in the car, and I said, okay, this thing needs a name. And she said, tell me about it. What makes it different from a normal lens? I said, well, it's really small. It's kind of cute. It does things different, but the small and cute part, I want to call it like baby lens, but then that takes me to Baby Ruth, which takes me to Bill Murray in the pool and Caddyshack. And, I don't want to go there. And as soon as I shut up, she said, lens baby. And it was like the angel saying, we could have called it a lot of things, but at this point, that was it, because I was like struggling with this, and I brought it up to Sherry, and it just like the first thing out of her mouth. I remember we were going somewhere, and I was going to be gone from the house for like 2 or 3 hours, and we just left the house like 10 minutes before, and I almost did a U-turn because I figured since it was out in the universe, like somebody in Bangladesh was going to be saying, hey, Lens Baby, that's a good domain. Let's register that. But unfortunately, 2 hours later when I got home, it was still there.
That's great. That's great. And it stuck, right? And you're still happy
with it? Yeah, it stuck. I am.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. It's a known brand within the photography universe now. So, yeah, that's great.
Glad to hear.
So, okay, so the evolution of Lens Baby, I think I had one of the very first ones that had kind of the four prongs on there.
It was three prongs, and you probably had this, what do we call this, the 3G. We ended up
still having that.
Do you? Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, that's a fun one because you can shoot it like the original ones where you're free, or you can push a button and then it's locked and focus, and there's a lot of steps to it, but glad to hear you got it.
Yeah, I got that. I got that thing, and it still works. And I also have a slightly newer one that is you'll have to remind me what the model name of it is, but it's an all-in-one design with kind of a ball joint.
Correct. Yeah, that's the Composer, and so the Composer here has a ball and socket, and you move it to where you want, and then you can focus, and so it's a little more repeatable than the original ones, and it's a lot more easy to wrap your mind around how it works than the 3G that you've got.
So
that you first got.
You guys are, or you, talk to me about the development sort of iterative process of these lenses. Is it, I imagine this white room with a big whiteboard with kind of the evolution of man on the wall, but there's Lens Babies there.
That's pretty like organized. That? I don't know. Initially, we came out with the original Lens Baby, and there was a lot of iteration that had to happen between going from what I decided that, okay, we can put a magnifying glass in a piece of tubing and offer that as the product. Now, this was initially what I thought we would be offering, and it's just basically my non-manufacturing mind was saying, what can I source? So I was getting these loops off of off of eBay. I was getting shop vac hose at Home Depot, and I was getting body caps off of who knows what website and cutting a hole in it. I was cutting an having an aperture cut at I don't even remember, but some manufacturer here in Portland, which was hard to find. You know, I was a photographer. I didn't make stuff. And then we're gluing it on the back, and then this little collar on the front here was done at a local plastic manufacturer. I think they were water jet cut, and I'd snap that on. I'd snap the loop in. I'd snap the body cap with a hole in it, and that was my idea of what this product could be initially, and. That's not what we...
Was that you in the beginning by yourself just sort of tinkering in the garage coming up with this? Or was that you in the production process in the early days of Lens Baby hand-making each deliverable?
So I was not hand-making each deliverable. What was me in my garage was what you see here, which is my 120 folding camera. No, it was a... speed graphic lens. It had plenty of back focus, so I didn't have to worry about it being super close, and I could have nice stiff tubing and still be able to focus. I could get lots of tilt, had a long focal length, so it just worked. And I started shooting weddings with this. Now, this is that box of lenses. I mean, I went out and got a whole bunch of lenses just like this one off of a camera that my sister had given me for graduation from high school. And then started making more like this. That was the handmade stuff. That was the stuff in the garage. This was more basic because I knew it was repeatable. I didn't have to go out and find a specific, you know, lens, a whole bunch of these multi-element 1960s lenses to be able to sell something over and over. I knew that the first one wasn't repeatable, but this was also pretty cheap and not very compelling. I started to sell this on my website, and I got one of the first orders. I got it back in a box. It said on the note that he put in there, he said, I opened the box, I took it out, I put it on my camera, I didn't even take any pictures with it. I put it back in the box, and I want my money back. And I was like, we're going to introduce this at WPPI in 6 weeks.
That's like showing up for a blind date and then seeing the date and then leaving before you even introduce yourself, right?
Right, and you forgot your pants, you know? And, like, I looked at that and I went, I would do the exact same thing. If I didn't have the experience of shooting with this and creating these, I'd shot Red Square in Russia. We'd gone and adopted my daughter the same week that, you know, the day after I signed the partnership agreement with Sam, my business partner. I'd gotten on a plane and gone to Russia, and I shot with this in Red Square and taken some unbelievable images, and I was so excited. But once I got this return back, it was like, oh, of course. Of course, if I hadn't had the experience of shooting this and creating images, I couldn't create with any other gear, any lens, anywhere. I would have done exactly what he did. Yeah. And so I had 6 weeks at that point to go from basically a, you know, not even a beta unit, an alpha unit, to a production unit. And I was not a manufacturer, and I'd not worked with manufacturers, and so I had to find partners that were willing to help me. And in 6 weeks, I went from a fixed aperture f/5.6 lens with, you know, all just kind of hacked together stuff using whatever. You could walk into your local plastic supply and Home Depot and do this, and to get what ended up being an all-metal, anodized, machined, laser-marked with the exact right tubing that was much more supple and more controllable by the user, with interchangeable apertures. Instead of a maximum set f/5.6 aperture, it now had an f/2.8 aperture, and then you could stop it down and get it really sharp at f/8. Or have it really ethereal. So I did all of that, not I, the people that helped me, I found people to help me do that in 5 weeks' time. And it was the most sleepless 5 weeks of my life.
But most exciting, too, I bet.
It was pretty exciting. And then we end up at, and this is all for a company that my business partner and I had decided, okay, we're going to order what we thought would be a year's worth of inventory. And we're each going to spend about 10 hours a week on this. And that's, you know, this is going to be a side thing. If it takes off, it takes off. We were sold out at the show. We didn't take everything. We took about 80% of our inventory down to WPPI. We were sold out in 3 days at WPPI of what we took with us. And, you know, with lines on the third day going, like, you know, down five or six booths of people that, you know, before we even got there, we got to the booth, and it was like vendors or people that got in early that were waiting for us to buy our product. And so we sold out at the show, and then within 3 weeks we were sold out and then backordered of what we thought had been a year-long inventory.
Did WPPI have a best of show concept back then, and did you guys snag that?
I don't remember anything except standing in the booth and selling lenses, essentially, and having all these people come up to me and say, "This is the greatest thing ever. How can I invest? What can I do?"
That's
and
the dream, yeah. Man, that is the dream.
It was great, yeah. There was so much energy and so much fun. We just had, and it was a great legacy, a great way to launch. You know, for me, okay, I'm just rambling here, but I'm going to continue.
This is great. This is historic. No, go on.
For me, my photography business, I had clients booked out like 3 years. I was doing commercial work. I was doing wedding work. And the weddings were the ones where I had, you know, I had 20 weddings that year scheduled. I had another 8 or 10 the following year. I had another half a dozen for 2 years out. And we still, it's like, oh, I don't know how long this is going to last. So I continued to be full-time with my photography business for 2 years. That was difficult, but it was necessary. And I felt too, and I still feel that to have credibility and to be developing products in this market, it's really helpful for me to be out there shooting with them all the time.
Yeah. And to piggyback on that, or to segue from that, the market for Lens Baby, you cut your teeth in the wedding photography space and then transitioned as an entrepreneur into the hardware space. Is your core demographic or your core market still wedding shooters, or has it branched out into other areas?
You know, it branched out so quickly, we were really surprised. I have a photojournalism background. I worked in newspapers through 93 and full-time, and then did freelance for newspapers and magazines until in about 97, 98, I started doing weddings. And continued kind of a multi-tiered business, serving a lot of those old clients. Okay, what was the question?
No. So when you as the product has evolved, and when you launched it, it was in the wedding space.
Right.
Is the
right.
Core demographic still wedding photographers?
I'd say it's. There is still a strong contingent of photographers for Lens Baby that's in the wedding space, but it is so broad and varied. It was really surprising for me in those first few weeks that a lot of photojournalists, which I never would have shot with anything besides the most perfect glass possible as a photojournalist, a lot of photojournalists started picking up the Lens Baby. In fact, I had a friend that was at the Christian Science Monitor. He was from Portland or from Eugene, and he came back and he said, "Hey, you know, I saw another photographer in the White House press corps shooting with this thing. And as soon as I asked him what it was, he covered it up and hid it from us. But I saw Lens Baby on there, and I saw you're involved in it." And he and I had both been photojournalists at the same time, working for papers here in Oregon. And I was like, "Really?" You know, and sure enough, within a week, there was a shot of Condoleezza Rice that was shot in her Senate hearings, shot with a Lens Baby. And now, and quickly, it made sense to me that, okay, they can't do anything, especially they can't do anything in software, especially early on in digital. it was very taboo to be able to use software to create any effects for photojournalists. You know, there were a lot of talks about ethics and what's this going to do to photojournalists.
Yeah,
rightly so. But at the time, adding effects, now people can use, we've seen all sorts of different things become more accepted and compelling as journalistic imagery that's been affected by software. But at the time, they couldn't do any of it. And in fact, it was so taboo that, you're risking your job to do anything but brightness and contrast. And so, we dodged like crazy in the dark room to get things nice and bright and make your subject pop. Uh-huh. You couldn't even do that. I mean, in Photoshop, it was like, no dodging and burning. It's like, seriously? Yeah. You could do a lot of things in traditional dark room that we weren't allowed to. So at that point, I went, huh, that's interesting. We're catching on. Joel Sartori at National Geographic came and talked to me about, macro work and his work with the Lens Baby. And several National Geographic photographers, Franz Lanting, he's had whole workshops on Lens Baby or talks on Lens Baby. And it's always, every time, it's like, really? You're going to use this thing that I just had, was having fun for that really serious work? Yeah. There was a shot in that first summer from Somalia, from a famine, and it was such shocking subject matter that the Lens Baby zeroed in on the humanity that was going on. You could tell what was happening in the scene, but it wasn't, it was now palatable to the that they could put it on the front page or on the cover of New York Times Magazine. And it made imagery like that couldn't otherwise be reported on visually in a way that could have a large audience that could view it and still pick up the magazine. It made it inviting and like, okay, what's going on here? I can see there's pain. I can see there's suffering, but it wasn't so off-putting. Yeah. I never would have applied that. I never would have thought that would be the application of the Lens Baby.
That's so great. Yeah, and I'm a huge fan, obviously, of extreme shallow depth of field. So yeah, you can obscure and reveal and tell different stories just by varying that focal point. Okay, so here's the other side of that coin. So in the photojournalism world, of course, altering pixels is taboo. Like you said, you can lose your job, and lots of photographers have lost their jobs for adding a baseball here, taking out a tree there, of thing. So, and it makes sense, if you want to be trustworthy in the medium, you can't alter the pixels. But what about the other folks that can alter pixels and are looking at pixels as raw material for the final work, or the clicking of the shutter is only the first step in the process to the final work? The devil's advocate side of it would say these photographers may look at Lens Baby and say, hey, I could do depth of field adjustments inside Photoshop or Snapseed or whatever. Why would I do it and bake those changes into the raw file and remove the flexibility of doing it later? How would you respond to that?
Well, I would say those are really important tools to have, and I use those sometimes too. Lens Baby is another tool, and it tends to connect with the subject matter in the field while you're shooting. And I end up taking different photographs when I'm shooting through a lens that has the final effect that I'm after. It's thinking two or three steps ahead for me and for a lot of people that really fall in love with Lens Baby is it's just preparing. It's preparing you to sit in front of a computer and look at 100,000 different options for how this can be, rather than making those choices on the fly and interacting with that depth of field and your subject matter at the same time. So Lens Baby is much more now that those software options are actually compelling. There's a lot that are beautiful and can do some really cool stuff, and it's very accessible. I would say Lens Baby is much more about the process, and if I want to be in the field experiencing my subject matter in the way that I envision it, in the way that I see it, then I'm going to shoot with a lens, baby. If I want to be safe, if I've got shots that absolutely have to be nailed perfect, and yet I might apply something later, like the kiss at a wedding, or you know, some you know, peak action moment, I tend to be, and it's not just for fun, because I love shooting peak action with the lens, baby, especially these flexible ones, because, you know, they're, but I digress. But the, if I want to interact with my subject matter, in those times when I can actually enjoy my photography and the process of taking pictures, not just modifying pictures and going to, you know, an ultimate vision, which I wasn't able to see in the field, then I like to shoot through the lens. And I do, I shoot very different subject matter. I frame things different. So I just find I find it more rewarding to shoot with the lens, baby. Although I don't rule those tools out.
Yeah, it's kind of as you were talking through it, it kind of clicked that, you know, the lens, baby, is if there's a graph on the left side is pure analog artisan, and on the right is digital and production work. You know, then Lens Baby obviously skews towards the left, where,
correct,
you know, it's more about the art of photography and less about the digitalness or the technicalities of the image and creating something that wasn't there. You're capturing things that were there and manipulating the light rays before they hit the sensor versus after, right?
Right. Right. And I would say too that one of the areas that Lens Baby is really it's really popular to have at a movie set. A lot of DPs just buy a complete kit. It's about $4,000 for a complete kit of Lens Baby PL mount, and we'll put another either a Sony or a Canon or a Nikon in that kit. But they have it there because they know that the post-production to create depth of field effects can be so time consuming, and it is, there's so many options and infinite. If they want their vision, if the DP wants his vision or her vision of what's going on in this scene and how this should be shot, they want to do it right, and they're going to do it in the field rather than either committing themselves to a ton of work in front of their computer on these huge files and a lot of money. Yeah. or trusting somebody else to carry out that vision that they'd rather be in control of.
Well, Craig, how has the evolution of camera bodies affected your business? I got to think that the shift of the pendulum over from DSLRs, or maybe it's not a shifting of the pendulum, but it's certainly a growing of the mirrorless side.
Yeah. Right?
So
yeah, for sure.
And the idea and the capability of being able to see the image through the lens while you're taking it, and the adjustments that you make are kind of WYSIWYG. It seems purpose-built for this lens, right?
Yeah. In fact, it's affected our products a lot, and I think it's made, like you said, you see what's going on. You see the true depth of field in a super wide, bright aperture lens, where you don't see that through an SLR. It's a, you know, at least a stop and a half darker when you're wide open on a 1.2 or a 1.4 lens, as far as the depth of field that your eyes can perceive, versus an EVF or a viewfinder. And so, Lens Baby is almost exclusively about depth of field. We've got some other effects, but depth of field, you know, our sweet spot lens has a shallow depth of field that is curved. At the brightest apertures, it's very, very shallow, so that curve has one tiny little spot of focus. And then our edge optics have a flat field, so when they're pointed straight ahead, they're a great prime. And then you skew that field of focus to... So we're all about depth of field, or that's where our roots are, and to be able to have that in the mirrorless. Now, on the manufacturing side, that's added quite a bit of difference. You know, we our first lens, the Velvet that we made for SLRs, but used that same optics configuration for mirrorless. We actually made the housing completely separate, so that we didn't have to add the 24 millimeters of or more of extra lens length to it. We don't have the economies of scale that for this particular lens we could make a specific velvet with new optics for mirrorless, but being able to say, okay, we're not going to make this twice as big for a camera system that is half the size was really helpful. It's got a slightly thicker mount, but that was kind of our first say to say, okay, we're going to move in a way that's not making this ridiculous, because not to call any of our products ridiculous, but essentially just adding a big thick adapter to the back is moving away from that, and most recently they're moving away from the intent of the mirrorless. Most recently, we've added the Trio. I don't have that here, but the Trio lens has three different optics, and it's kind of a very short lens. It's bigger to accommodate the way the optics work, but it's more in light of, hey, I've got three lenses in one. I've got a small, a fairly compact lens to go with my fairly compact camera with three pretty cool effects. So. So I'm excited about it. I think the ability not to have to clear a mirror and be 48 millimeters out from the sensor gives me a lot more freedom. It's like being able to go back to the Leica rangefinder, where those lenses have optics that sometimes come ridiculously close to the film, but that's more freedom that we get with the mirrorless for the optic designs. And so there's a lot of things that we can do. I'm more excited about the future of that now that it's really starting to take off, and that even the full frame, Nikon's been supplanted as the full frame master by Sony recently, and that's huge.
Yeah, that is huge. That is huge. They were giving ample warning, though, I want to say.
Yes, they were.
So one of the features of the lens baby, and I don't know if this is in all the systems, but the ones I have, or that original one, came with these little discs with different shapes on there to kind of play around with the bokeh and the specular highlights that were produced. Are you still doing that? And talk through that a little bit, how that works.
So we have mag on the Lens Baby 2.0 up until the early optic swap optics for the Composer. They have magnetically receptive little discs that go in as your aperture. Yep. And so we have a creative aperture system that has we offered this when we sold those. We don't currently sell any with the magnetic system in it.
I still have them.
Somebody's going to want to buy them from you. We stay tuned. They may be coming back in some form or another. But essentially what happens is the pattern on there changes the shape of the specular highlights and the bokeh in the background. So it can be very subtle if you don't have highlights in the background that are out of focus, but it doesn't affect your subject matter that's in the sweet spot or in the foreground of the image that you're focused on. And then you add to the fact that we've got a curved field of focus, and you end up stretching these stars or seagulls or stripes or whatever you're using as your creative app, because we also made them so that you could carve out your own. Yeah. And it added something new. Lens Baby is about options. Mm-hmm. What can I do that I can't do with my other gear, and how can I vary that? The apertures change the size of the sweet spot differently than a normal lens affects depth the field. The tilt changes things. You can be standing right next to somebody using a one lens baby just like yours, same exact optics, same exact body, and come out with a completely different image because of all the options that you've got.
Yeah, infinitely variable options. I want to segue this, and I want to kind of trail it off with kind of marching towards the future. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of mobile photography. In fact, we have a podcast called Pocket Shooters that talks about all things mobile photography. I know you guys have jumped into that space as well. Can you talk about that? Because that's a huge area, and it's not showing any signs of slowing down.
Yeah, so in 2013, I believe, we came out with a mobile lens that had a curved field of focus. And for me, just the challenge of curving having a field of focus that was apparently shallow and two had a curve to it on a sensor that was like, I don't know, I've never looked at one of those sensors, but I imagine them to be like 4 millimeters high. Maybe they're bigger, maybe they're smaller, but they're tiny. And yeah. How do you get depth of field effects on something that small? I mean, there's ways to do it, but to get it just with an accessory lens like that. So I was excited about it, and I get excited about these challenges. And so we did a Kickstarter that went great. It was our test of, okay, what do people want? Do people really want to use this? And it was good, and we've since added to that system with two additional lenses, one with a much bigger sweet spot that doesn't turn the image upside down. Regarding the future of that, I'm not sure. We have things on the docket, but right now we're looking to continue to focus on the enthusiast photography market. I use the Moment lenses for getting wide or getting telephoto, and they're fantastic. Yeah. But that's really not currently what Lens Baby does. We're not just about angle of view and changing that. And so when you can do so many things in apps and people are used to just carrying a phone and be able to, you know, swipe, 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 swipe. Oh, that's the effect I want. Good. I'm done. Yeah. And it's kind of fun. Yeah. You know, it's great. Hey, my image looks so much different every time I swipe. It's kind of addicting and great. And so, I still have a question whether people really want optics, to modify their phone lenses. And if I get convinced of that, we got a lot of things on the docket to offer, but, and several things which, I carry around with me and have a lot of fun with. So
I think you hit it right on the head. At least for me, I'm no representation of any one market, but with my phone, which I use a lot for photography, and all kinds of photography, everything from taking photos of the whiteboard in the fridge to my parking yeah. spot, you know, those kind of things. But it's friction, right? So my phone, the reason I use it so much is because it's the path of least resistance to capture right. images. If you add friction between me and capturing that image, I'm yeah. going to be less apt to do it. And if I have to put lenses on or accessories on my camera, then the conversation starts shifting towards, well, I have all these great little mirrorless cameras over here too. Why don't I just use a proper camera if I'm going to
sure.
if I'm going to yeah. put the Iron Man suit on my iPhone? Why don't I just, you know, I hear you. So what's coming up next for Lens Baby? What's to the extent that you can share, where are things going for you?
Oh, what can I share? Lens Baby
requires Nikon, right?
Oh man, I don't know. I don't think they're headed downhill that fast.
No.
But yeah, the we are focusing on enthusiasts. I mean, we have a following of people, of photographers that are just rabid about Lens Baby. And a lot of them have been, either they started and somebody gave them a Lens Baby and somehow they figured it out despite not having a lot of technical knowledge of photography, and that became their style and that became the way they see the world. Or they're photographers that have been burned out on photography and this gave them a vision for something that can be fun and exciting and really reinvent their photography in a way that they haven't done since college or after, when they were first learning photography. And so we are focusing on people that are continuing to pick up the cameras that are pushing the boundaries of photography. And I would say the mirrorless does that. The larger sensor cameras do that. I'm looking at I can't be off the record here, but
slightly.
I'm excited about the medium format stuff that's out there, and there's opportunity there because they're putting out a lot of 2.8 or 3.5 lenses, which aren't that compelling when you're comparing them to a 1.2 lens on a 35 millimeter. And so what kind of creative options are they going to want? And We are also looking. Lens Baby has always been about seeing in a new way, and we're looking to continue to do that in the future. But we're also looking to personalize that and make Lens Baby more about focused on helping people find their visual voice, because each one of us sees the world differently, and through a different lens that adds another layer and opens up different aspects of that vision of the world and how things can be seen and how things can be shared. And finding each of our visual voice is critical. As a photographer, as a photojournalist, I remember looking at the NPPA magazines and the weekly things and going to the short courses and all the things involved in my industry and saying, how in the world are they going to the exact same, you know, kids building bridges out of popsicle sticks event and seeing this unbelievable life-changing, you know, like portfolio Pulitzer Prize in my mind, worthy image. Like, that's a nothing thing. And I went to that same event last week and I got nothing. And so that frustration and that desire for me to say, okay, how do I see the world? It's not exactly the way they see it. Because if I just stared at their images and said, I got to go take that picture, it becomes a formula. But I had to have that frustration to say, okay, what do I see that's different than what anybody else sees in this scene? And two, how can I learn the way to do what they're doing is to capture something significant in this scene? It's going through my lens, the way I see the world. What's significant to me isn't going to be significant to you or to the next person. Everybody's going to come in with their own lens that they're adding on that. And then to then be able to give people what I like to think of as a paintbrush that paints different than what the person next to you paints, to add to that. And that's the way, because we are relying on technology. We're relying on these devices to take our vision of the way the world works and the way the world looks and what's meaningful in the world, and to relay that to people that view it, to the people that view our end product. And so my hope is to be able to give people a new paintbrush that then they can paint something that they couldn't even see before.
Perfect. And we'll end it there. Craig Strong, thank you for coming on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Frederick.